Okay, good morning, everybody. This is the Pacifica Foundation National Board Meeting, in-person meeting in New York City at the fabulous Beekman Hotel. On meeting on February 22nd, Friday, first day of our meeting, convening at, I've got to start on the East Coast, 9:34 a.m. East and 6:34 a.m. Pacific. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to, well, the first thing we have to do is call roll, so I'm going to go ahead and call roll. Yes, Ms. King.
So as to avoid any technical...
Into the mic, please.
So as to avoid...
You're good. So,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Right. So that we avoid any technical points to my argument that this board is not composed by our rules, I want to make sure that I know when I can challenge the makeup of the board.
Okay, I think since there's more than one challenge occurring here, let me call the roll so that everyone is on the board can be acknowledged as being present, and then I'll entertain challenges to people's presence after that, okay? Thank you. All right, so Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
Here.
Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Dan Siegel?
Not here.
Not present. Margie Wilkinson?
I'm here.
Thank you. Benito Diaz?
Present.
Luzette King?
Yes, I'm here.
Tony Norman?
Present.
Katia Stitt?
Present.
Lydia Brazon?
Here.
John Crumshow?
Present.
Brenda Medina?
Present.
Summer Reese? Present. Heather Gray?
Here.
Janice Lane Ewart?
Here.
Teresa Allen?
Present.
Jessica Apollinar?
Present.
Nancy Henschel.
Here.
Richard Uzel.
Here.
Carolyn Burden.
Here.
Janet Coleman.
Here.
Serene Roberts.
Here.
Manajay Saba.
Present.
And also present, Andy Gold.
Here.
General Counsel. Thank you. And, I can't hear if the recording secretary is listening, but I presume that he is. Alrighty. Since I've called the roll, before I go to determine excused absences and designating a timekeeper, I will entertain challenges at this point. Ms. King?
Yes. I want to say to everybody, I'm not going to call names because that tends to get away from what we're trying to say from PFW. I would start by saying the bargaining of our rules ended with a court agreement some years ago between listeners and board members when we had a problem, the last major problem we had in this network. So to now, some 10 years or so, violate them in every other way, this is what is causing us problems. It's causing us near financial and other demise. And I want to bring particularly to your attention the seating of a public official. We did send around a document that was worked on by some legal-minded listeners at PFW. And we're basically saying that one of our delegates, by virtue of Section 42A, is disqualified to either sit on the LSB and worse, on the PNB. The bylaws there are very, very clear. It says that anyone who is or subsequently becomes an elected official is deemed to have resigned. Elected official. To make sure that happens, we have to declare when we get nominations to become LSB candidates, that we sign something saying that we are not, or I am not, an elected official. It doesn't mince words. It's very clear. Are you an elected official? It's either yes or no. The person in question, and just for reference and record, is Tony Norman, who signed, I believe, I haven't seen it yet, but he has not denied it, one of our local election supervisor, Dickwee, was very, very cross when he found out that that answer did not reflect the true situation. I want to say, too, that we raised this matter at our board when we elected people for the... No, that was not so. We raised the matter at our last ordinary meeting, and the person in question said that he was not going to abide by the rules, even if that LSB said he is deemed to have resigned, that he would await the result of this body. I am very concerned, very, very concerned, that speaking to some of my colleagues, this matter is going to be shafted for political expedience. We either stick to our rules or we don't. We must set an example. Today is the day. The rules are very, very clear. When I believe that the person in question relies on a decision that the LSB made some years ago, and in 2008, we did have a similar situation. I personally wrote to this board complaining that the local station board had seated a public official. Nobody took any notice. This PNB is causing a lot of problems for itself, and we need to set an example. Further, the LSBs are committees, and the rules in the bylaws say that this body can overrule any decision by those committees. And if you're going to allow these committees to do as they like because they have autonomy, then give us back our accounts. Let us manage our own money. You can't have it both ways. And I'm asking that you declare today that we do have an elected official sitting among us, and it's against our very rules. There's nothing to negotiate. There's not even a vote. All you have to do is acknowledge that there is someone here as an elected official. Thank you.
Ms. King, to take action, you would need to put forward a motion.
I move that this body, the Pacifica National Board, declares from the information we have here, which comes from the DC Council, an advisory neighborhood commissioner is the lowest level of government in our state. That person gets elected to that position by virtue of putting forward...
What is the motion specifically?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I move that the body declares that Tony Norman is an elected official, and accordingly, he is deemed to have resigned his position as an LSB member and a PNB member.
Is there a second to that motion? Second from Diaz. Thank you. I had Ms. Rosenberg and I have Mr. Norman. Go ahead, Ms. Rosenberg.
Just as, I don't know whether this is actually an amendment or not, or a point of order, but I just want to make it for the record, which is that if we were to approve this motion, it would therefore, eliminate the results of the WPFW directors election, which happened last month, because if an individual voted who was ineligible to vote and ineligible to serve as a delegate, that affects the total results at the election. So basically the upshot of this motion is that we would be unable to seat any of the sitting WPFW directors. So the amendment or the point of order would simply be that passage of the motion would result in failing to seat all four sitting WPFW directors until the LSB redid their election.
Duly noted for the record. Tony Norman, and Ms. Medina, did you want to speak to this subject or something else? Okay, so when we're done with this, I'll come back around to you. Go ahead.
First of all, let me thank this board. It's always a pleasure to be here. I always love WPFW and Pacifica, always have, before I became involved.
Yeah, into the mic, Tony, so they can hear you on the stream.
Before
please.
I became involved. But let me just say this this issue about a public official. When I first came on the board 2 years ago, it was never considered that the advisory neighborhood commissions were public officials, as my understanding. Because we had before me, there was a member of the board who was also chair that was also in the same seat that I hold. And I was always under the impression, based on the issues that came before this PNB, and also because I'm an attorney, I read up on some of this even before I became on the board, that public official, as defined by the state of California, we are a California corporation, and that is the controlling definition by the Supreme Court of California of what a public official is. And under that definition of the Supreme Court, I sent around a memorandum. I don't know if all of you all received it. Under that definition, you cannot be a public official if you do not have any sovereign authority, regardless of what the title, whether you're appointed or elected. Sovereign authority means, do you have the power to legislate, pass regulations? Some commissions do. Do you have the power to execute, enforce laws, issue licenses, revoke licenses? Do you have the power to adjudicate case and controversy? Advisory Neighborhood Commission has none of these. We're just advisory to the district government. In fact, it's a glorified president of a neighborhood association, if you really want to know the truth of it. If any of you all serve in neighborhood associations, homeowners associations, civic associations, that's all it is. It's a glory, and it's only a 3 or 4 block area. So let's not blow it up to what it more than what it is. I wish I had all this influence, but I don't. But the bottom line is, under that definition, that is not a public official, because we have no authority other than to advise the government to clean up trash, crime issues, and neighborhood development issue. And to be honest with you, 90% of the time they don't even listen to us. So we're just an advisory position. So under that definition, and plus I mentioned that when I was appointed to the board, when I first came on the board 2 years ago by our LSB, and I mentioned to them I was a community activist, I was an attorney, and I was a local advisory commissioner. That was never a secret. So I was appointed on the board, and then I was elected chair. One of my campaign presentations was that I was an ANC commissioner, elected chair. And then I ran for re-election. I was elected twice to the chair. And then I was voted unanimously to the LSB. And they knew that then. So, and I also just recently ran for the listener membership. And during the forums on the radio, I announced that was a well-known public issue that I was a neighborhood advisor. In fact, on the Tom Porter show, which everybody, I don't know if you all are familiar with, sort of a popular show, he had a special segment, just me and Mr. Lawrence Guillot, just talking about what the commission and neighborhood advisory commissioners are on the radio. So that was a well-public known situation. So it is not a public office in that sense of the word, to be quite frank with you. And also, I was elected, I received, and I'm not bragging, I'm just pointing this out as a statement of fact, I received the largest number of votes from our membership of any other listener candidate, and I ran on the platform that I was involved in the community, I was a neighborhood commissioner, and all the LSB, it was debated in the forums, on the air, and many of the people around this table that are making these objections also ran, and they were very well aware of that. And then I was elected to this PNB. And I received the highest number of any other on the first ballot, and they all knew it then. There was no objections raised during that time. I was elected then and submitted. This objection was only raised, to be honest with you, maybe 3 weeks ago. And so, and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but let's just deal with the merits of it. The bottom line is, this is not a public official position. And I think this board ought to really clarify that. We have the right to clarify that sometime in the future as a purely advisory position. For instance, there are a lot of people in D.C. that serve as precinct captains. Now, that's a local area where you worked at the polls. Now, technically in D.C., that's considered a public office, even and it's elected. Now, I've served this. I'm not a precinct captain now, but someone could be disqualified for just serving as a small precinct captain. So that's something that need to really be defined. But it is a purely advisory position, and that's my position on the board.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. I have Ms. Brazone, Ms. Saba, and Mr. Diaz.
Yes, and I was just going to ask that after the other members make their comments, if we could hear from our counsel, Andy Gold, on the issue.
Thank you. Yeah, I was planning to do that. Thank you. Ms. Saba, microphone, please.
Good morning. So according to your definition, any advisory board, on being on any public advisory board qualifies, would be, at the point that qualifies a person to be on the board? That's based your own understanding at whatever level advisory board they are?
Maybe disqualified.
Because your understanding, as I understand it, Mr. Norman, is that if you have sovereign authority, meaning you are making decisions that are having implications, and you are decision maker, basically, not advising. So you mean that being on any advisory board at any level of government, or would qualify? Would as a part that qualifies the person to be elected on the board or be appointed to the board?
Let me just say it's not my debt. It was the Supreme Court.
No, I understand that. But your understanding
of it. I will answer that by saying if it is purely advisory and has no sovereign authority, yes. The answer to yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. And everyone, please remember to speak into your microphones, not for the benefit of each other, but mostly for those who would choose to listen to us on the stream, and also for the recording. Thank you. Next is Mr. Diaz. Microphone, please.
Thank you. Well, first of all, it's very interesting that Tony... It's very interesting that Tony would now... denigrate his role as a ANC commissioner. People in D.C. know very well that ANC commissioners have a great weight with regard to government and public decisions, and that the councilmen generally go by whatever the ANC for that neighborhood and the ward, actually, more than anything, whatever the ANC of that ward decides on whatever issue, that's what the councilman going to do. So if the business people want X done, they're going to go to that ANC. They get the ANC to rule. They make sure, politicians do, and you know what business people do. And so, since the business people make sure that their position wins over, and then the ANC commissioners or the commission itself simply serves as a cover for that politician. So it's the ANC that took the decision, and the politician simply went with it. The bottom line is that the D.C. government has ruled time and again that these positions are a level of elected government in the District of Columbia. And now I know that there are places, other places around the country that may have similar governmental bodies, and those bodies may or may not have any real weight. The only thing I can say is that in D.C., they have great weight. And some of these, quite a few of these commissioners go on to become the councilmen, And so that's number one. Number two, I think the problem comes down to the fact that the LSB, our LSB, PFW, made a mistake in its decision back in 2008 when it decided to ignore the opinion handed down by the elected, not the elected, by the election official that we had working with us on our elections, and that was specifically asked to study this matter. And when she came back and gave us the opinion that that this position, it goes contrary to the bylaws, the LSB ignored her based on a different interpretation of a related issue by another Pacifica attorney. And I don't know those particulars, to be honest. I was not on the LSB at the time, you know, and Lucette would know more about that than I am, perhaps Katia, you know, but that's what it is. You know, thirdly, it's interesting how Mr. Norman all of a sudden tells us that he made his position as an ANC commissioner known time and time and time again. Now, it is true that he did mention that at the original election when he was elected as a temporary chair of the LSB. And it may be possible, I won't contest, that he may have said something during the Tom Porter show. I don't know that. I didn't hear the show, so I can't speak to that. But in general, you know, he has not broadcasted his status as an ANC commissioner in all this time. It is also true that the LSB did not take up the issue until just recently. But that is because the LSB was dominated by the same person that the decision was made around back in 08. And all Tony did was to take her place. So we had one LSB chair who was an ANC commissioner, succeeded by the next LSB chair who was an ANC commissioner. So what kind of, what is that? So now we're going to, the LSB made a decision, it was an improper decision, and you can call it a precedent, and so now we're supposed to stamp it into history because the first person made a mistake, so now we're going to go with it.
Thank you, Mr. Diaz. Next on stack is Ms. Burden, followed by Ms. Apollinar.
Thank you. This is one of those issues that is not new. It's a long history of LSB approval. How do I turn this on?
Speak closer to the mic.
Okay, thank you. Is that it? Better?
That's better.
Thank you.
These approvals by the WPFW LSB cannot be undone. There's a long history, and we are faced with the results of it now. To undo it would cause an extraordinary amount of difficulty, not the least of which would be the loss of representation from an entire station while a new election was run, and the cost of it encountered by us. There would be resulting legal issues, I'm sure. And so I'm proposing a substitute motion to the motion proposed by my colleague, Ms. King, and I'm proposing that we accept the seating of Tony Norman and that the board issue a statement to the effect that under no circumstances shall this seating or the seating of Dan Siegel or any such seating be ever construed as a precedent. This is a one-time exception. The board bylaws need to be rewritten and clarified, and pending that and going forward forever, that these two seatings not be used as a precedent ever again by the board. I think we will solve the local problem and the immediate problem and avoid a great deal of contention. So I would like to move that as a substitute motion.
Is there a second? Second from Uzel.
Point of order?
Yes, Ms.
Lane Ewart. I'm very new. My sense of the Roberts Rule of Order is that there's a motion on the floor. It's been there's a first, there's a second, there's a point of discussion, and I'm not clear that a second
motion can come before the group until the first motion is decided.
It can. It's a substitute. Thank you. Yeah, no problem. And you know what? I should have done this. I've done it for previous boards. I will. There's a nice, like, two-page Robert's Rules of Order cheat sheet that's very handy for people, besides the huge book, which gives that sort of order of motion. So,
thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you. And when we get to voting on it, I will explain that because it's a little treacherous. You have to vote on the substitute first and whether it fails or becomes the main motion. So I'll walk us through that. Thank you.
I have my point of order here.
Okay, I've got a point of order and a point of order, and then I'll take the next speakers. Go ahead, please.
My point of order is that this motion is out of order because the speaker spoke to the issue and then made the motion. My understanding of Roberts requires that the speaker do either, not both. So therefore, the speaker could talk about the issue or make a motion. To do both would be a violation, and therefore this motion would be out of order.
Well, in theory, one can make the motion first and then speak to it. You're still allowed to speak to the motion, because that would be motivating the motion if she'd made the motion first and then said why.
Madam Chair, my understanding would be that the speaker would make the motion and then, when asked to motivate it, would then speak about it, not the reverse.
Okay. Do I have another point of order going on? No? Okay. I had a point of order down there. Is it a point of order?
Well,
I'll take points of order because I still have a stack for speakers, but if it's a point of order, go ahead.
I just wonder if I do have a right to reply to all of this, to some of these things.
Okay, that's not a point of order, but I can put you back on stack. Stack? Okay. Next on stack is Jessica, please, and then I'll go back around. Margie, you had your hand up also? Okay, so it'll be Jessica, Ms. Apollinar, Ms. Wilkinson, Ms. Rosenberg, and Mr. Edwards-Tiekert.
Point of procedure?
Yes.
I apologize for not using the whereas formula for the motion. If you would accept the motion as an introductory, I would appreciate it. It would save us a good deal of time. Thank you.
And just to clarify, in terms of how I've chaired for the last 2 years, I'm strict about Robert's Rules of Order in terms of making sure that we adhere to, you know, voting on things in the right order, but I allow people to speak and to make motions. Probably people are used to that already, as long as they get to their motion. Jessica, please.
I've been in a situation like this twice now. This is my second time on the PMV, so for me, I do understand both sides. I truly do. Mr. Benito, a few of us don't know what ANC means, so we kind of need like a clarification because I know the slippery slope that we're looking at. However, not only is this costly to the foundation, there's two things that kind of pop up in my mind. Number one, I don't know, Tony might be okay with resigning the other position and staying with us because we have business to do. I don't know if anybody's ever asked that before. And number two, if he's been serving for the last couple of years and someone's already brought this to our attention, what harm has he done that I need to know about so I can have an informed vote? I don't understand what the problem is in this particular case. I have had seen other cases where, yeah, I don't particularly want a public official on our board ever. But this particular position kind of doesn't, it doesn't speak to me as a public official. So I guess I still need some more clarification or concrete evidence or facts that I can rely on. Wrongs or harms, if anybody could ever, anyone can tell me that. And like I said, also, if everyone can maybe keep this, we've been looking at this for a couple of weeks now. I don't know why it's coming up now and why we haven't worked on this before, no problem. But all the comments should probably be condensed maybe to a minute or two so we can get on with other business. Thank you.
Thank you, and that's a good point of order. Brevity is our friend. ANC is Advisory Neighborhood Commission, is that correct, for the benefit of this stream? Okay, Advisory Neighborhood Commission, as opposed to the ANC we're all more familiar with. Mm-hmm. Okay, next on stack was Ms. Wilkinson, Ms. Rosenberg, Mr. Edwards-Tiekert.
Is this working?
There you go.
I was simply going to make the point that Ms. Apollinar made about brevity because we need to move on. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rosenberg.
I simply put myself on the stack to deal with the re-entering of the motion Ms. Burden made if she did not enter it correctly. Is it necessary for me to do so at this time?
No, it was seconded. It's just a proper substitute. It's fine. Thank you. Okay, I've got Brian Edwards-Tiekert, followed by John Crumshaw, and then Katia Stitt.
Just two things. For what it's worth, on our local board, some years ago, we had a member who was serving on Berkeley's Peace and Justice Commission, which is a position where you're appointed by a city council member. She disclosed this to the election supervisors when she ran. They consulted Foundation Council and decided that that was not a problem, and she served on our local board without protest. I understand there may be different practices at different stations. I just wanted to make sure they were all on the table.
Thank you.
My understanding of state law is that it's exactly as Tony Norman summarized it in California. There's case law from the California Supreme Court that sets up a two-pronged test. You have to meet both tests, and one of them is that you have delegated to the office you're serving in some of the sovereign functions of the government. That said, so that this never takes up time at a meeting at the local or national level again, I would ask that when council weighs in on this, that council suggest a controlling, unified definition of what constitutes a public office that we can apply in the future.
No pressure on general counsel.
You want
counsel.
Me to do something that the California Supreme Court has failed to do.
We're not asking much, Andy. That's why, that's, you know, we just know you can do it. Okay, Mr. Crumshow, please, followed by Ms. Stitt.
I concur with what Brian just said, and I wanted to add my own experience as a retired teacher. When there was an advisory council, they went through and had a wonderful program to improve the neighborhood, $750,000. Everybody liked it except the principal of the school, and it failed. So what I think is that advisory councils give advice and big players get in there representing the district and say no, and that's the end of it. So their advice is purely advisory, and I think if we were to apply a very stringent standard like this, we would eliminate many, many people who might otherwise want to serve on our boards. So it would make sense to have the council impart his wisdom in a way that we can apply in future cases, have a better understanding, and make it clear to people how we're working, and at the same time not usurp the power of the Supreme Court in the statement.
Leaving the Supreme Court supreme. Ms. Stitt, here you go.
To Ms. Apollinar's point, I just wanted to... To my colleague's point, Ms. Apollinar, I just wanted to read for you all from the ANC page to give you a clear understanding of what an ANC commissioner does in the District of Columbia. The advisory neighborhood commissions consider a wide range of policies and programs affecting their neighborhoods, including traffic, parking, recreation, street improvements, liquor licenses, zoning, economic development, police protection, sanitation, and trash collection, and the district's annual budget. In each of these areas, the intent of the ANC legislation is to ensure input from an advisory board that is made up of the residents of the neighborhoods that are directly affected by government action. The ANCs are the body of government with the closest official ties to the people in a neighborhood. The ANCs present their positions and recommendations on issues to various district government agencies, the executive branch, and the council. They also present testimony to independent agencies, boards, and commissions, usually under the rules of procedures, procedure specific to those entities. By law, the ANCs may also present their positions to federal agencies. ANCs, agency officials, and the general public are now, written by the Office of the Attorney General on ANC issues. So I hope that clarifies that, in fact, this really is an arm of local government. And I think it goes a little bit beyond just being advisory.
Thank you, Ms. Stitt. Okay. Is there anyone else who has not yet spoken who wish to address this subject? Okay. Second bites? Okay.
No, it's just a point of order. I don't think we can actually vote to unseat someone unless we want to give notice and do two-thirds. I think you have to rule on it as a point of order. And then it's a real technicality. Then appeals are in order.
I feel you.
But it's got to be adjudicatory, not...
emotion. Liking it. We're going to get along fine. Okay.
I've got Ms. Interesting how we spin the law. It's very clear that person is deemed to have. What are we talking about? Now, let me address a few points here. Angela Laurier was one of our bestest, as some people would say, election supervisor. And she declared this in 2008 to be a public official. This PNB did not act. Secondly,
to raise the point of a precinct captain. That person is not elected. This is the thing. They're not elected. And another thing is, we need to ask ourselves, on the declaration, it specifically asks, are you an elected official? We probably need to ask Mr. Norman if, and I heard him say this, he used the precedent which the election supervisor went against. He used that to say, no, our election supervisor, John, was very, very circumspect. Had Tony put yes on that thing, he would have investigated. Tony was very mad when he discovered. I for sure did not know that Tony was an elected an ANC, because I was the one who alerted the body in 2008, and I've been watching. If I knew, I would have said something. I laid the blame on this body that did not act when we came to them. You never considered it, and to now tell me that you're going to accept illegal decisions, I mean, what are we doing? Whose rules are we going by? You take this to a court, and the court will say, well, you didn't do anything about this because you accepted it as a precedent. It is a precedent. I mean, we are treading on dangerous grounds, and it's clear here. Kathy Williams, if you don't want to make the decision now, Kathy Williams, the assistant director of the ANC office, confirmed that it is a political office and one that is an elected position as defined by Pacifica bylaws. Her telephone number, 202.
Oh, don't please put people's numbers out on the stream.
No.
Oh.
Office.
Oh, okay.
No,
all right,
no, no,
thank
no, no,
you.
No.
Sorry, I've had my cell phone number put out on the internet.
Office. 202-478-2407 if we want further information.
Thank you. Okay, I had Ms.
Chair, I need to ask Mr. Norman why he didn't declare that he was an elected official.
Okay, I can't allow crosstalk if Mr. Norman wants to address that. I'm going to go to Ms. Allen.
It concerns me that I've noticed several instances where people have run for the position. One of them was Susan Young. Before she even ran, she said, hey, I'm on the board of Miller Theater. Is that a problem? And then it was ruled on. And, you know, if our people try when they run, you know, I think that needs to be taken into consideration. So at this point, I would vote for your motion. If I understand it correctly, it says, accept the seating of Norman and issue a statement that these two seatings, and I guess in this motion we're going to refer to the Dan Siegel issue and the Norman issue, not ever be used as precedent. Is that the motion?
And that we engage in a revision of the bylaws with the understanding that part of the problem is that the bylaws...
I think that would have to be a separate motion because So let's stick with the first motion because also the way you worded it the first time didn't include that revision.
So I would support this motion, and I would also ask our council, you know, are we going to have like a subcommittee or a task force to kind of review these things to kind of get to a clearer definition of how we decide in future cases about this maybe lack of clarity in our bylaws. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. I'm going to go to general counsel unless there are any other members. Okay, Mr. Diaz, and if there's anybody else, and then I'd like to hand it off to our attorney. Go ahead, Mr. Diaz, into the microphone, please. And I do concur that we need to clarify these things going forward so we don't spend so much time every year on this, but go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm just simply...
into the mic.
I'm just going to say that, I don't know one way or the other what documentation Mr. Gold may or may not have had a chance to review, but we have in D.C. a community group that has been created in recent months. It's called CMS, Concerned Members and Supporters of PFW. And they have a legal committee which has produced a number of documents some of which Mr. Gold may have, and the more recent one from a day or two ago, I don't know whether he got it or not. But I would suggest that this body may want to review those documents in light of Mr. Gold's proposal or opinion today, you know, before it tries to make a decision, because number one, it would only be proper, and number two, I've heard several people here today say that part of what you're trying to do is make this go away, you know, so that we can get to the real business. Yeah. Of Pacifica, and so that we can avoid another election that Pacifica is going to have to pay for, and et cetera. Well, let me tell you something. This is not going to go away.
That's right.
This community group is very serious about holding the LSB, the PFW LSB, and Pacifica to the bylaws that certain elements try to use for their own purposes when it so fits them. And the community group is watching what the LSB, and now in this case, I guess, what the PMB does or doesn't do. So I'm just going to say that this will not go away. So y'all can vote on it one way or the other. You can sweep it under the rug if that's what you want to do, but it's going to get picked up off that floor. And that's not a threat. I'm just simply stating what the community group has already determined.
Thank you, Mr. Diaz. Ms. Rosenberg?
It's awfully hard to rewrite or clarify or interpret bylaws language on the fly, and unfortunately that's basically what we're trying to do, and it's not so simple. So with all due respect to both sides here, I do agree, and I have lots of personal experiences with this, that the bylaw provision, whatever the intent, and I think actually that the statements about the intent that have been made are correct, isn't written clearly enough to avoid a series of problems on this issue. And the problem that we have is, yes, it's not going to go away. This or this seven more times this is going to happen in the next 7 to 10 years. So we do need to fix it. That's an important priority. We need to understand it's not the first time it's happened and it's not the last time that it's going to happen. And if we do, in fact, want to enforce what I believe is the intent of those bylaws going forward, we're going to have to strengthen and clarify the language. It's not anyone's fault that the language has not held up over the years, and therefore there has been endless confusion and redefinitions and people going back and forth and people seated that perhaps shouldn't have been seated and people not seated who perhaps should have been seated. All of this has gone on. What I hear from my community and what I expect a lot of us hear is that people would really prefer that we not spend all of our time trying to kick one or the other person off the board and having these kinds of uses of car meeting time. So my preference here would be that we would hear from council. We would seriously acknowledge the work that needs to be done in committee to clarify this bylaws language, and that's where we go with this. The threats to sort of keep this percolating forever are really not what I hear from the community is what they would like to see this board doing. So I hope that's not what we'll do. And I hope that what we will do is commit to keep this from happening over and over and over again. It's at least the fifth or sixth time that we've argued over this issue since 2007 or so.
Second time since I've been here. Once a year at least. Ms. Apollinar, and I have Ms. Brazone and Ms. Henschel.
I'm sorry, I do know the other members that could, I guess a bad word to use, benefit from removing Mr. Norman. However, again, if he's been serving and working, I'm looking for people who are invested in Pacifica. I'm talking about going broke. for Pacifica. That's what I'm looking for, because that's what I'm doing. But that's just me. However, if you've worked, or Mr. Norman's worked on this board for at least the last 2 years, from what I understand now, again, he's been working. What is the harm in allowing him to continue this 1 year so that we have time to rewrite and close up the holes in our language, in our legislation or our bylaws, so that this doesn't happen? I understand both sides. I really do. But I still haven't heard anything specific to facts that what in this particular case with this particular member, and I know there's other volunteers available or other people that will step up behind him. I appreciate our former members or the members that want to see this Mr. Norman removed, but he's been working with us. What is the harm in continuing this one particular position with this one particular person?
Okay, thank you. And I need to ask everyone, it's already 10:19. We're well past, as we usually are at these meetings, but it's something different each time that we spend our time on. But we're 10:20 now. So everyone, if you could try to limit yourselves to 1 minute. Ms. Brazone, Ms. Henschel, Ms. King, and Mr. Diaz.
Well, I just...
I'm sorry, is it a point of interest?
So it's mine.
Okay. I'm sorry, was someone seeking? Yeah, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask. Right now, are we debating Carolyn's amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, substitute motion. Both are on the floor. I mean, you can address either one.
Oh, okay. So then when our counsel speaks to us, if he can also differentiate between the organizational precedent, we would need that clarified in the motion, versus a judicial precedent and how precedents are set because of cases and so forth.
Thank you, Ms. Brazone. Ms. Henschel? Yes, can you pass her a microphone, please, for the stream? Thank you.
Thank you. Mine is more a point of information. Mr. Norman, does the ANC have the power to impose fines, fees, and foreclose on people's property?
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Diaz? I'm sorry, Ms. King, did you wish to address us? Go ahead, please. And then Mr. Diaz.
Only if you would engage me, because my colleague asked this question twice. What has he done? I really didn't want to go into it, but if it would help, I could say a few things as to why we focused or why the some people raised the matter. I didn't know that he was an ANC commissioner, but if you want me to say it, I'll say it.
I don't think it's necessarily germane to get into our records, any of us, because really the issue is a legal one, which is whether or not this is a disqualifying position
for
him. But not whether or not he's a good board member.
I just wanted to make the point that if she wanted to know, I can.
Okay, and that might be fruitful for discussion anyway, but I think to stay on point, it's not the merits of the person's service, but rather whether it's a disqualifying position. Thank you. Mr. Diaz.
I was going to speak to
Stream, please.
Leave it alone.
It's okay. It's for the people that are listening out there in cyberspace, because we are so interesting.
Oh, I bet. No, I was just going to speak to the same in terms of what harm is caused by this person staying or getting on the PMB. That's
okay, thank you. And I would prefer generally as much as possible to not personalize things unless someone has in fact done something which would be interpreted as harm against the organization, because we are just dealing with a legal matter here. Thank you. Now, I've consulted with general counsel. I'm very mindful of the difference between closed and open, and that legal matters are not discussed in open session. Our counsel, unlike the rest of us who are opining as board members as to what we think should or should not be the interpretation of our bylaws, our counsel will be speaking to us about what the potential liabilities are to make a decision one way or the other. And since that bears on potential liability to the organization, I would have to respectfully ask at this point that the public adjourn shortly. And again, I apologize. We try not to just suddenly have executive sessions, but it is permissible under Roberts that if something arises in the course of open session that you appropriately need to go into closed session to finish discussion of, that you adjourn the open meeting long enough to go into closed session and finish handling the matter. So at this time, I think we have exhausted the discussion amongst board members, and it's now time to hear from our attorney. So we will send word out shortly. I don't anticipate that it should take longer than half an hour in closed session, and we'll be coming back to open. Ms. Brazone?
Since there were other challenges, are those going to wait until after? You want to get through them so that the closed session addresses all of them?
No other challenges have been presented yet officially.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Are you going to ask for everything to be presented, or are we going to adjourn to executive session, come back, and then have those, and then go back into executive session?
We may have to, frankly. Looking at the scheduling, based on where we're at, we're already at almost 10:30 by the time we're done in executive session here, coming back into open, whatever other challenges are raised, whatever they require in closed session, we can get to after lunch because we're scheduled for closed session again. I mean, if that's how it ends up rolling. I can't just... How do I put this? I can't simply entertain other challenges in the middle of two motions on the floor on this situation, so we'll have to come back out.
It seems to me that, first of all, we have to vote on whether we're going to have a closed session, don't we?
Well, if anyone wants to hear from our attorney, we have to go into closed session. So if you want to take a vote on that, but I was going on the will of the body, which seemed most people did want to hear from general counsel as to this matter, and I consulted with him, and since part of what we hear from general counsel is what are the potential liabilities to make a decision one way or the other, that's a closed session matter. So in order to finish to take a vote on this particular challenge, we have to go into closed session. I can't entertain other challenges in open just because we're going into closed. It's just the way it is. I mean, I can't help it. This is how our morning is.
And as the point of order, if there's an objection to going into closed session, then we can do a vote on it.
Yes.
But it's just a time. You know, it's a question of time.
Yes, Ms. Roberts.
Okay. Did general counsel indicate that he needs to give his advice in closed session?
Yes, I asked him before I went to him. If general counsel wishes to speak. But I did check with him first. I didn't make a unilateral decision about that.
Yes.
Well, I'm curious because I'm not sure if it's an issue of disqualification, which every member... I'm sorry. If it's going to be a matter of disqualifying someone for whom this was voted...
Yeah.
Why is my mic turned off? They said everything was on.
There's no switch.
It's on.
Okay.
There you go. Much, much better. We can hear you now.
Thanks. If it's an issue of disqualifying someone who was elected by the membership and removing them from the LSB and the PNB, I think members are entitled to hear the full discussion, including council's position one way or the other. Now, the vote on whether or not to accept counsel's position might be a closed session issue, but the discussion from the information from the council should be, I think, be public.
Okay, well,
it's
exactly the opposite. The discussion has to be in closed session. The vote can be in open session. The vote is part of dealing with membership. The discussion with council deals with legal matters, which are automatically closed session. Our first duty is to protect the organization. That is our duty as directors, and to hear whether or not there are litigation potentials one way or another is a closed session matter, to hear what council's opinions are. And we can come back out into open session to take a final vote after we've considered those opinions. Mr. Edward Steeker.
I apologize for complicating things.
That's okay. That's what we're here for.
Tracy suggested this would vacate the elections of all four. The challenge would vacate the elections of all four WPFW representatives. Do they have to be absent from the closed consideration? I mean, if it's an issue of liability, they're potential litigants, right?
That's an interesting point you raise, Brian.
That is probably correct.
That makes sense. Boy. Okay, let me think about that one for a minute. Let me talk to counsel. It's one thing, the person who is the particular subject of a matter being excluded, their entire signal area being excluded is an entirely different proposition. But yeah. I'm processing it. You know I have a legal mind. I'm thinking about it here. Ms. Medina.
I'd like counsel to let us know, like, why we need to go into closed session in regards to his opinion about this issue, as opposed to...
Okay, one moment before counsel.
Let me just real quick.
Hold on, Tracy.
And we haven't gotten to some of the duties that are part of the relationship of the board and some of the other things. But there's an attorney-client privilege that adheres to any communications between an attorney and one's client. And there are communications that I'm happy to do in open session. There are things I'm happy to talk about in open session. But when it comes to providing specific analysis of a legal situation, giving advice to this body, which is my client, those are privileged communications. And there's two issues. One is just the content of that communication. The other is if we publicly broadcast our communications, my advice, we run the risk of a waiver of attorney-client privilege in matters going forward. So I would always prefer to err on the side of making any of my communications with respect to legal issues confidential. So, you know, as this has drifted in the direction it's drifted, I think it really is incumbent that we go into closed session. We deal with, you know, the legal advice issues separately, and then we can come back to open session.
Thank you.
What about the WBAI people? Well, I mean, the PFW people.
The other three members.
That's a good question, and we hadn't thought about one before.
We've had advice from him through the email anyway.
That's to the board. That's solely to the board. Do you mean to the other PFW people?
She means the four PFW members who are members of this board, right? One who's the subject of these motions, but that if the other three are also affected by the outcome of our decision-making process, should they be included or should they be excluded because they may potentially be adversely affected? And not to cite the past, but when Dan Siegel was not seated on the board, neither was Laura Privis. So obviously a corollary person was affected by a decision. So that does potentially have impact on other board members. Ms. Rosenberg, microphone. Yeah.
The way that we dealt with it on that previous occasion, which might or might not have been correct, but just, you know, to put it out there, was that we had some level of discussion as a group, and then we did have a private consultation with our counsel that did not involve any plaintiffs or potential plaintiffs in the that was actual litigation, but let's say here in the proposed litigation, so we may want to split the closed in half, let everyone be heard, and then ask the WPFW folks to recuse themselves slightly and come back to open session.
I would say I wasn't around when that issue first arose with the KPFA, but yes, I did come in the middle, so I inherited some of the splitting of the board. And what I do remember is that in Los Angeles a year ago, when it came to the discussion of the potential appeal of the Siegel litigation, we did excuse from the room. We allowed people to be in the room for some of the discussion, but then excused from the room the entire delegation of people who were involved in the litigation before I rendered an opinion and before there was a vote, which is probably the same process we should follow here.
Thank you. I had Mr. Crumshaw or no?
That was my point exactly, that we would have a two-step process, the first being general advice in closed session, and then if it is determined that it's necessary, we would ask the members affected to recuse themselves.
Okay, so counsel advised me at the point that he feels we're about to enter that territory so that I can advise the members, okay? So, are there any objections to going into closed session? No? Okay, thank you. So, again, members of the public, my sincere apologies for asking you to leave the room. We will be as expeditious as possible, and we will send someone out to let you know the moment you can come back in.